Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guest.
Welcome along to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, episode number 137. I'm Paul Spain.
And I'm Bill Bennett.
Welcome along, Bill. Always good to have you on the podcast as a guest.
And it's nice to be here.
And for new listeners, maybe you can fill them in on where you fit into the technology world.
I'm a journalist. I write about technology, and you can find my stuff all over the shop. But I have a website, billbennett.co.nz.
Excellent. Well, let's dive in. Now, Windows 8.1. People have been waiting for this, or what was originally codenamed Windows Blue. And it's supposed to bring, well, there's been quite a bit of info released about it. We have talked about it on the podcast before, but it brings quite a lot of fine-tuning to Windows 8, addressing some of those things that people didn't quite like, tweaking others, and really just upping the overall experience. Is this something you're excited about? It's going to be available in beta end of the week.
I think I'll be getting it by the end of the week. I'm enjoying Windows 8, but not as much as I hoped I'd enjoy it, and that's because it's just not that great on a desktop without a touchscreen. It's got that sort of touchscreen design. It's just lacking something without a touchscreen.
Okay, that's interesting because I use it. I mean, I use it. What I used to do on Windows 7, I guess, it moved over to Windows 8 before Windows 8 came out. And a lot of the time, what I'm doing is just working in front of my big screen with keyboard and mouse as you usually would. And that stuff just operates, for me anyway, exactly the same as it always did. But you get the advantage of the fact that you turn your computer on and, oh, I didn't have to wait for that to start up. It's virtually instant. Those sorts of things. What lacks for you when you're working on the desktop?
Occasionally you hit something which takes you to a metro screen. We're not supposed to call it metro, a modern screen.
Yeah.
And that's just irritating. Otherwise,
yeah, that's true. There are those sort of things where you've got to do a little bit of tweaking to avoid, double click on a photo and it takes you into, the new Windows world when actually you're just trying to do something in that desktop context and you may not be too keen to flick across.
And the search is a bit weird still. I mean, if you want to search for a document, that can be a little difficult.
And that was one of the highlights of Windows 8.1 is the way that they've got a what looks like a really nice sort of converged searching mechanism built in. So I think that was definitely...
I mean, I've learned to search. If I want to search for anything now, I have to open an Explorer window and search in the search bar there rather than go to the search charm, which is just a bit clumsy.
Yeah, the search charm, you had to choose what you wanted to search in rather than just doing a search, right?
But there's another really annoying thing about it, and that is that supposing you're searching for a document, and I've got something like 8,000 documents. If you get the wrong one, you've got to go back to the start all over again. You can't go back to the list. That list disappears.
Yeah, it doesn't remember it, does it?
Yeah, no.
And I think everyone will have those sort of unique things, particularly with a new platform, which, to a large extent, Windows 8, has delivered quite a new experience, other than when you're sitting in your usual desktop, which isn't so different. And there are those oddities which I guess they're trying to smooth off the edges where they didn't quite get it, maybe a bit sharp or a bit rough first time around. So this should be interesting to see what the broader response is to it.
But when I've used it on a touchscreen device, it's fabulous as a touchscreen operating system. So there you go.
And we're seeing more and more touchscreens, thanks in part, I guess, for the rest of the year. We expect the very large majority of notebooks coming out to be touchscreen based, and thanks in part to Intel for raising the specifications on what an ultrabook needs to be. So for a laptop to be classed as an ultrabook, it has to have a touchscreen going forward with this new generation of Haswell chips.
Yeah, but I've just got this feeling there's a whole class of user that doesn't really want touchscreens. And if they do want a touchscreen, they get a tablet. So there is that issue.
Yeah, I suppose there is, but there are some people that maybe don't use all the USB ports on their computer or use their Ethernet jack and so on. But it's there. There's no downside probably to to having it in there, is there?
Oh, and Paul, people will moan about anything.
Okay. Well, yeah, so I guess someone has to, and we've got to have something to moan about. Now, BlackBerry have, of course, just in the last week or two, of course, they launched their newest handset, the Z10, here in New Zealand, and we're still waiting on the Q10, which is the one with the keyboard.
I'm actually quite... I like that Z10. It's a really good phone. If BlackBerry had managed to get that out, say, 18 months earlier, they would have had a huge chance of, you know, being a very dominant phone in the market. It's probably at least a year later than it should have arrived.
So what about their most recent move? And, of course, you know, one was making their BlackBerry Messenger software available more widely, bringing that to iOS and Android. And then today we've heard about they're launching what they're calling a secure workspace for iOS and Android, which, you know, basically will allow you to have secure access to email and calendar and so on within those environments that will link back to BlackBerry's corporate messaging service, so that corporates can keep the BlackBerry server that they may have used for many, many years, but deliver that secure content down to non-BlackBerry devices. Is that something that you think is going to work, or again, are they
it's a
bit too far behind on it?
No, I think it's a strategy. I think that BlackBerry is setting itself up so that it has a future, even if it's not making devices. And that could be, that there could be a rump BlackBerry at some point, which is effectively a software company.
Yeah, I think they're smart to do this because, they don't want to lose everyone's revenue. No. Just because somebody likes the look of a competing device a little bit more, or likes some of the services or software.
But it does
that's available on another device, because there still are a lot of organisations, particularly government organisations in the US and the like, and I think lots of other ones around the world that still use BlackBerry. And if this means that those people don't have to completely get rid of BlackBerry, they can have a bit of both. I think that can work.
And there's another aspect to it that's really important, and that is that you get BlackBerry in there. It's a beachhead inside the organization. It gives your people a chance to talk to the company about, perhaps you made up to buy some devices to go with this software. It just keeps the dialogue open. It keeps the contacts with their key customers. So, smart move.
Mm. All right. Now, Air New Zealand sharing a little bit of news recently, and we've got at the air show in Paris, their new Airbus A320 was shown off.
Yeah, great.
Now, what do you think about these new planes? What's the highlight of the new A320 compared to the previous A320s that have been around?
I'm a big fan of the A320s because there's enough seat room for my legs. I mean, it's that simple. The other planes, I tend to get bruised knees on any flight more than about an hour. We go further than Wellington, it's a struggle to walk afterwards. But the main thing about these is I think they're just much more fuel efficient. Is that right?
Yeah, they're talking about quite a big, really dramatic increase in fuel efficiency, and I'm still trying to get my head around how they're able to do that. They're talking about the 2.4 meter high sharklets that are they're calling them at the end of the wing.
I don't think that's the only. I mean, it's like go faster stripes on a car, isn't it?
Wow, there must be some sort of impact on your fuel efficiency, because they're highlighting that on these A320s compared to the previous planes, potentially 18% less fuel per passenger.
Yeah.
Although that is being compared with a 737-300, so it's not a direct comparison with the other A320s. So that's probably the point, I guess. If you compared the new sharklet A320 with the old one, maybe it's a much smaller difference. Because when we hear about the Boeing 787 Dreamliner, which Air New Zealand also confirmed some more details around them getting their first of those next year, they're talking about a 20% decrease in in running costs for on a per passenger basis.
And a huge amount of that is just the weight, just the lower weight of the plane, I think,
because you've got carbon fiber plane.
Yeah, the materials
completely different build to really any previous commercial jet, right?
Yeah.
So looking forward to seeing the Dreamliner in action, but those are starting to they're well underway from a production perspective, and Air New Zealand's right at the front of the queue, which is really cool. In fact, I think some of the first ones are going to be used for testing and the like, and then will be retrofitted into an Air New Zealand plane after that. So, and
I'm told that they're going to be mainly used for going to Asia.
Yeah, talking about Asia and Pacific Islands and the like, maybe Hawaii.
Maybe I'll go back to flying again.
Flying? Were you a pilot once?
No. I'm actually traveling somewhere.
So good stuff there to see. Air New Zealand staying reasonably at the forefront with these new things. I guess what they're missing is the Airbus A380, but of course that's about squeezing lots and lots of people onto one plane, and that doesn't seem to be the model that Air New Zealand are going for. They're more about having more regular flights with lesser passengers.
Yeah, those 380s are for sort of high density routes where there's lots of people travelling between two destinations. I mean, although a lot of Kiwis fly, we just don't have those high density routes.
No, I mean Emirates is the main one that sort of comes and goes, doesn't it, with their A380s. Now, Orcon, we mentioned last week about Orcon having an announcement, and we were unfortunately under an embargo, so we didn't know the details, but we weren't allowed to. We agreed not to share those things. So what they launched last week was it's a new app for their customers that's free, and of course what Orcon delivers with their Orcon Genius service is a internet-based calling service for your home phone. And what Orcon Genius Go does is it takes that home line in a traditional sense, it's not really a physical phone line these days, and puts it onto your smartphone. So for instance, your home number can ring on your mobile phone. There's no cost to receive that call other than the cost of any data transferred if you're not on Wi-Fi, and you can use it to make outgoing calls just as you would from your home line. And of course landline calls or voice over IP calls are very, very low compared to what we're used to paying for mobile calls.
And apparently you can use it from overseas. So you can be sitting in, say, London and get a call in your home line or call out from your home line, and you're just paying for the data.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where in the world you are, right?
Yeah, so, mind you, roaming data is not cheap.
Well, yes and no. I mean, that's certainly come down a lot. From later last year when Vodafone launched their new roaming data offerings in some countries, it's becoming fairly reasonable, particularly Australia.
And it's capped with Telecom as well.
And then Telecom have launched theirs is a different model, as telcos always want to come up with something a little bit different so they can't be directly compared. But those rates are so much lower. But if you're on Wi-Fi, then those sort of dramas disappear. So, you could be sitting at an airport or wherever, somewhere in the world,
and
calling somebody that's in Auckland, and it's effectively a free call.
Yeah, and the quality is quite good on those lines I've seen. Yeah.
So now, what do you think the impact of this is going to be on our big telcos? Orcon being, I guess, about the number four player in the market now that Telstra Clear is part of Vodafone.
It's what's really going on is that Orcon's differentiating itself from the others and offering its own set of services, whereas the others tend to be their offerings tend to be pipes and bulk things. Orcon's actually going for some value added stuff. So it's really about, I would imagine it's really about Orcon differentiating itself to get market share. And what's really going on with the ISP space is they're all trying to bulk up ahead of the UFB coming in, because once you get that UFB, that kind of service, that kind of value-added service, is the only way they can differentiate themselves. There's no longer when the service is universal, then the only point of difference is how you bundle it up and add value to it.
And if you can differentiate with key services that your customers come to rely on, then they're never going to go anywhere else.
No.
If the competition can't match that.
Yeah, get them hooked on it.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. Now, another service that also is in the area of innovation from local internet providers is the global mode offering that Slingshot launched last week as well.
Yeah, and actually, I'd like that and the voice over P
process. So for those that haven't caught the details, global mode really allows you to access services such as Netflix from the US without having to jump through the hoops that you previously had to. And we've got an article up at nztechpodcast.com on how to access those US services and international services like Netflix. But one of the hoops you always had to jump through was either a VPN or another proxying service to access the likes of Netflix. You want to get one of these low-cost TV and movie streaming services, Netflix being $8 a month. Very, very attractive, but quite complicated to set up. So this really simplifies the process, doesn't it?
Yeah, and with my router that I'm using at the moment, I can't even do that because I can't set the IP addresses on it. So this would solve those kind of problems for a lot of people. And let's face it, we don't all want to be sort of hardcore telecommunications engineers setting up things like VPNs and so on. It's much better to let someone do it. So once again, what we've got here is some product differentiation from a smart, clever product differentiation from an ISP. It's interesting that they are separating out in these ways with these offerings.
Mm. But what was pretty amusing, and I said when TV3 interviewed me about it last week that Slingshot's official line on this was pretty laughable. They're basically saying that, this is a service so that visitors from overseas can access their services while they're in New Zealand. And I thought it was pretty entertaining that they've taken that approach. But you can understand why they don't want to step up to the precipice and maybe say exactly what their target audience is what they're hoping people will do with it, because they don't want to stir up any sort of legal challenge maybe from content rights holders that are saying, so you're deliberately offering this service so that people can access content that maybe isn't licensed for the New Zealand market.
I was going to say that Slingshot's justification could be put on one of those TUI's ads.
Absolutely.
The guts of it is that there is something to be worried about, because there was a previous service, the MaxNet one.
Fix that launched was it May 2012
and that obviously didn't last, and
got about a week out of it before the plug was pulled, right?
Yeah, and no one's really saying why that plug was pulled, but we can make some reasonable guesses. Don't fly above the parapet too high.
Yeah. All right, well, let's hope that one sticks around, because it is certainly something that's good for consumers, and it does stir up rights holders to make content more broadly available. And, we either need the big players like Sky and our broadcasters to start offering content in better ways, or for them to open up or change the agreements that they have in place, so the likes of QuickFlix can get all the content, or we need services like this to get at the content, right?
Yeah, and of course there is another development in that area already with the English Premier League.
Yeah, and I think that really stirs things up, doesn't it? So we've got Coliseum Entertainment, or Coliseum Sports Media, should I say, who they've basically signed the deal to distribute the English Premier League soccer matches within New Zealand, which they're going to do via a free-to-air game on TVNZ once a week. And then for those that want to subscribe, you know, for $150 a season, people can watch as many games as they like through their computer or tablet, etc.
Yeah, I'll be getting it, I'm sure. It's a bit, it's interesting. It strikes me, it's like the unbundling of music that happened with iTunes. You know, if you want to buy one track off an album now for $1.79, you can, instead of buying the whole album for $18.99 or whatever.
Mm.
In much the same way that you have to buy the whole of Sky for $120 to $150 a month, you can now just pick out the bits you want. So, you know, in my house, we pick out the soccer and the rugby and the cricket.
Mm.
And in someone else's house, they'll pick out the motorsport or Wimbledon or whatever. It's the way things are going
to
go.
I guess, you know, to a degree, Sky had to do something like this in the past because of, you know, maybe the costs of set-top boxes and, you know, the cost of, you know, satellite feeds and so on. But as we move into an internet world where you can do these things very granular, you know, on a granular basis, delivering things over the internet, then all of those sort of cost structures disappear.
It's exactly the same thing. Is that
there's room to be more players, isn't there? That are distributing media into even a small market like New Zealand.
But it's also that they had to have scale to in order to be, you know, a profitable business, and to be able to bulk up to be able to buy those properties overseas.
That's right. And I mean, what we've got here are some entrepreneurs with some good backing that have been able to spend, and I don't know what figures you know you've heard, but you know, well into the millions for these rights, you know, on something that isn't an absolutely sure bet, but it is the start of what will become you know, the norm to some degree in the future, which is you know, pure online access to, you know, a whole range of content without having to have a Sky TV subscription.
Yeah, and there might only be, say, 10,000 people who, you know, 10,000-20,000 people who will buy that, but that's a good business.
Yeah, well, I hope it is. I hope it's a good one that sustains for them. The deal they've signed gives them rights for 3 years, so that should really be enough for them to you know, to make some progress, to get underway any deals that they need to have with, you know, the TV manufacturers, so their app can be shipped on TVs. You know, work deals in with Sony and Microsoft to be on the PlayStation and on the Xbox. You know, all of these things are going to come. Probably not all for the first season, but I think those things will come through. Particularly if they do, one thing that they've alluded to is that they may end up with Coliseum Sports Media targeting other markets and not just New Zealand, which would give them some sort of, you know, scale.
Yeah.
All right, now Microsoft has given in to some of the complaints about digital rights management with the Xbox One, and I guess the mocking that they took from Sony around you know, sharing games. It's quite interesting, isn't it, that they've given up so quickly.
Well, yeah.
Do you think this is all about the sales numbers, and what they saw was that a lot more people were pre-ordering the PlayStation than the Xbox, and they realised that perception is reality, and you know, if people just weren't happy with this difference between them and what Sony were doing, they just had to change it.
Well, I think it's remarkable that when they're faced with direct competition like that, they change straight away. Whereas, you know, why didn't they do something about the start button on Windows 8 straight away? That took, you know, it's taken effectively maybe not a year, but, you know, 9-10 months to get that fixed. But then they don't have a direct competitor in that Windows space. So.
That's true. They're trying to compete with all the tablet operating systems. So, you know, in many ways they're competing with iOS and Android to a degree, and you know, with the Mac operating system too. But I guess that's because it's ahead of launch, they're able to move, you know, pivot quickly on it.
No, I don't think so. I think it is the competitive threat from Sony that's made them act this quickly. And
is it actually a good thing? I mean, there's talk that actually some of the benefits of the digital rights management, you know, outweighed the ability to, you know, to take a piece of, you know, physical media and, you know, and share it with your friends.
Well, here's the rub, Paul. The hardcore gaming community don't like it, but the great unwashed, the mass of people, perhaps the 90% of people that would buy these boxes, you know, would like to be able to use their old discs and swap them and so on. So it's a question of, do you pander to the vanguard or to the, you know, to the masses? Well, it's not much of a choice, really, is there?
Mm.
You know, if you're not going to sell enough to break even, you're going to have to go with what the masses want.
And they certainly don't want to, you know, to lose market share compared to what they had with the Xbox 360, which is, you know, has done incredibly well in the market when you consider the first Xbox sold very poorly against the PlayStation, and with the 360, they've certainly in the US and I think internationally, been outselling the PlayStation for quite some time.
Well, it's one of Microsoft's brightest spots in the market is the Xbox, and it's probably internally one of their sort of happiest groups to be working in.
Yep, I would think so. Now, Samsung had a bit of a press conference last week. They announced a number of products. They were focused on this Ative range, which are the branding that they put now on their Windows devices. So it covers their Windows tablets, their Ultrabooks, laptops, and also their smartphones. Now, the one that stood out, we haven't had hands-on with this just yet, but hopefully we'll do reasonably soon, is the Ative Q. And this is sort of a hybrid tablet device that runs Windows 8 and Android, and it's got a super high resolution screen that sort of sits between full HD and 4K resolution, 3200 by 1800 pixels on a 13.3-inch screen. Looks pretty nice.
It's going to come in at about $2,000 Australian. So in New Zealand, we're probably looking at about $2,500, I'd say, which is quite a lot of money. And I still wonder why anyone would want to have Android and Windows on a device, though. You know,
well, I guess if you're running Windows 8, then you've got a touch operating system.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I know personally, you've got a real personal preference that's away from Android, particularly on tablets.
Yep.
And I know we've had a number of guests that sort of dislike Android on a tablet. I actually don't mind it. I don't mind it. So much. I think it works reasonably well in that form factor, but I don't think I'm looking for a tablet that necessarily has multiple operating systems on it.
No. I mean, there's obviously, well, what's really going on, I think, is that they're throwing lots of ideas out of the market and seeing what sticks. And it just could be that this could be something that there's a lot of demand for. But
realistically, if we look at the sales that Samsung are making on products, it's all around Android, right? I mean, Android is a massively popular, it is the most popular, mobile operating system, by all accounts.
No,
smartphones.
No, Android the family is, but each individual Android is not. I mean, if you look at it at the moment, the various flavors of Android that are out there, there must be five or six now. Everything from jelly ice cream and ice cream sandwich and the honeycomb world and so on. The thing about Android is that it's actually it's not one thing, it's many things. And you're right that there Android beats any other operating system in terms of sheer numbers behind the brand.
And certainly there's there are massive apps, and there are apps that are available on Android that aren't going to be found on Windows, for instance. So I think there's some reasoning behind this that makes it makes sense for Samsung to try this. I think it'll be fascinating to see actually how the market responds. But I guess my key point is that most of the Android devices, other than your top end phones like the Galaxy S4 and the Note 2 and so on, most of them are quite good value devices or lower price points, and this might be good value, but it's certainly at a higher price point from the numbers that you're picking.
Well, the thing is that Samsung's got the dosh in the bank to go ahead and experiment a bit. That's good. I mean, all credit to them for that.
Mm.
I just think that they're probably searching for a market that may not be there. I just get that feeling that a lot of hardware companies are doing that at the moment. They're kind of grasping around in the dark because we're not really sure where we're going with this post PC thing.
Hmm. Well, I mean, when we look at the when we look at the ATIFQ, it's an ultrabook, it's a tablet. You've got a nice looking keyboard and so on there.
It's a set of steak knives.
Now, at this price point, we were talking earlier before we started around the MacBook Air, which we've got here, and this is now a really mature product, great battery life, really consistent product, a much lower price point. Which one of these would you be buying? What are you lining up to get?
Oh, I'm just trying to get my act together to get myself a new MacBook Air. But that's because of my work. That's because of what I do. I mean, I'm essentially a writer, so I don't need a lot of other things. What I need is a keyboard and a screen. And I can do it very well on an iPad. But I'm just thinking, the MacBook Air is a little bit more polished, a little bit better way to go to do that. And if it isn't, well, it's... $1,800. It's not a lot these days.
It's a pretty consistent product, yeah. In terms of bang for buck, it is in its class for what it is. It's a virtually unbeatable device. I don't think there's anything else that delivers that sort of consistency at what starts at $1,449.
Yeah. And there's two things to say. First of all, the battery life thing is just incredible. I mean, going all day, being able to leave the house in the morning and get home without having to recharge is just fabulous. But the other thing is
you save the weight of having to carry a charger around all day.
Yeah.
When you're someone that's out and about or university student studying, whatever, all those scenarios.
All the hassle of finding a PowerPoint.
Yeah, and the hassle of actually plugging in. So I think those things that come with the new Haswell-based systems really, really stand out.
Yeah, that'll probably move on to other Ultrabooks, I'd imagine, over the rest of the year. But the other thing is that you and I get to see an awful lot of kit in the course of our jobs, and it's only every so often you pick something up and you think, this is nice, this actually feels nice, and the MacBook Air has that. I mean, there are other products that have that, but the MacBook Air has that in spades. It's not just the branding, it actually is a beautifully designed product.
Well, it's taken me a little while to come round on it, and I think when it first came out, I kept coming across situations where people were damaging these things because it was not as robust as a MacBook Pro. And I think what we've had to do is learn actually to treat these things with a little bit more respect, a little bit like with cell phones. The old cell phones were so big and chunky. You could drop them. I mean, I remember people running over them, and remember, an old Nokia that, one of my staff left sitting on top of my car, and I drove off and it spun around a corner, and this phone just goes flying off, on this, stone street, and bouncing along the road to pick it up, put it back together, and away we went. No problem.
Flushed them down the toilet. Fine.
Yeah, almost that. So I think we've had to learn now with these with our smartphones that actually they're a bit more fragile now. They've got the bigger screens and various elements that make them fragile. And I think the same is the case with a lot of our laptops now as they slim down and so on.
But the MacBook is just, I mean, the MacBook Air is just a plain nice thing, but it's also a good piece of kit for working with as well.
Mm.
It's got everything really, so it's,
all right.
No question for me.
Well, talking about another device that seems to be now starting to gain a little bit more attention in New Zealand, and that's Microsoft's Surface Pro.
It's a nice device.
It is, and I've been using it a bit more over the last few weeks since it was officially launched here. In fact, I had it out at a meeting today and using the stylus, and I find it actually works quite well once you get used to using it that way. And I'm someone that traditionally likes to use a pen and paper quite a lot. I will take my laptop into meetings, but some people in some environments that doesn't work, or it seems a little bit rude to have your laptop screen up and so on.
But a stylus and a screen's fine, I think. My view on this is...
Just what? Don't lose the stylus. I'm on my second stylus.
Oh, really?
There is. Yeah, you've just got to treat it like it's a good Parker pen or something like that. You keep it on you. Don't use the magnetic clip to clip it to the side of the Surface Pro because it'll get bumped off. Usually, I find within the time it takes me to get from wherever the meeting room is back to my car, and where did that stylus go? And they're about 40 or 50 bucks a throw, so you don't want to be dropping them every day.
I remember the same problem with the Apple Newton. The thing that strikes me about the Surface Pro is almost, why would you want to buy another Windows laptop? Well, okay, you might need a bigger screen, but if you don't need a bigger screen, I don't know. It's the Windows laptop. It's the go-to Windows laptop for me.
Yeah, I think the Surface Pro is. I think it's a pretty exciting device. Where I find it lets me down is just when I'm looking to the future, and I guess when I look across at the MacBook Air, that is the future because it's got the Haswell chip in it, which gives it that awesome battery life. And then I look back at my Surface with its four or five hours.
But Paul.
And I feel so let down. So I'm looking forward to there being a Surface 2.
No. The one you want to buy is 3.1. Any Microsoft product, wait till 3.1. It'll be brilliant.
Excellent. All right. No, good advice. But, what we expect is there will be another Surface Pro in the next few months. So, if you're sort of sitting on the fence and wondering, is that the right fit? But it's the sort of device you're interested in. I think what we're going to see is the Surface Pro with much better battery life, and we're likely to see a 3G option. Now, how that pans out for a New Zealand market, I don't know, but I would very much expect that that's something that Microsoft are going to manage to squeeze into the next generation because it's something that people have complained about in the first generation. I'd also like to see some sort of a keyboard that is a little bit sort of stiffer, and you can sort of dock into it, so you can turn that Surface Pro into a laptop for those occasions.
I touch type, which would be helpful.
Like what I'm doing now on my laptop with one hand on my lap, and I'm lean forward. So there's a few situations like that where the Surface Pro doesn't fit, but overall, really cool device. And I like being back in that world of being able to scribble digitally. It takes me actually back to my Palm Pilot days of the 90s, where I used to scribble with the stylus, with what do they call it, graffiti was their writing language.
I found the Surface Pro's handwriting recognition works as well, surprisingly.
Well, I guess Microsoft have been delivering that handwriting recognition for well over a decade. Those earlier tablet
now.
Windows versions and so on. But it's pretty cool. Now we've also got another device here, the UE Boom. This is a product, UE being the Ultimate Ears brand, which Logitech bought out. I don't know how long ago they bought it out. Maybe a couple of years ago.
I think so. Yeah.
But they've made very high end, in-ear headphones, and there's a range of other devices they're starting to bring out. And the Boom is a battery powered. You charge it up with a USB connection. It's battery powered. A battery powered speaker. That's It's reasonably small, but it puts out a massive sound, doesn't it?
Yeah, Boom is the right name.
Yeah.
It's
USB charging, but it's Bluetooth based. But one unique thing, which we haven't had a chance to test because I'm waiting on a second one to arrive, is you can actually link at least two of these together. So if you want more sound than you can get out of one device, or you've got multiple people there, maybe you're trying to just fill out a room with some sound, then you can link these together to double up, or maybe even triple up the sound. I'm not sure if you can do it with more than two, but
I wonder if it separates out the right and left channels.
You've got the option to either have both of them in stereo, so right and left are on both units, or you can make one unit do left and one unit do right, so you can actually put one them on either side of a of a room, for instance. So they're quite smart in those regards.
Yeah.
There's a control app for Android and for iOS.
Yeah, it's a neat thing.
There's always little cool products coming through, and this was one that sort of jumped out. I think it's been available for a few weeks, but we've only just got around to getting our hands on it.
Make a good Christmas present.
Yeah, what are they coming in at? $299, I think, is the recommended retail price in New Zealand. Although I noticed that there's a few of our local retailers that are doing them at about $350. Wow. So I'm not sure, you know, why they're selling them above retail. I thought that was quite unusual, actually, when I went looking. In fact, I found different prices in different places as I looked around online for the product. I think $200 is the US price. So 300 including GST sort of sounds about right, yeah, for the New Zealand market. Is this something that you would you'd use?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think I'll be looking at buying one.
The competition that's been around for some time is the Bluetooth based Jambox that's been around for a while. But from what I can see, my first play with from Jawbone, so the Jawbone Jambox. But my experience with this, it's actually it's a step up on the Jambox for portable sound. Debatable which of them looks sort of cooler, because they're both got quite a nice look to them. Pretty handy. Now the other thing which I think the Boom has that was one of the features of the Jambox is that Bluetooth calling as well. I think the Boom can do Bluetooth calling, although that said, I haven't had a chance to play with it. So if that's something you're looking for, do double check that and maybe give it a bit of a test run. But there are lots of retailers like JB and so on that have got these in stock now in New Zealand, I believe. So worth a little bit of a look. But certainly a nice accessory to go with your smartphone if you wanted to rock out a little bit. Now, another little local story. ASB are doing something quite unique. They're launching this week a new Facebook app. And, yeah, I don't know if you've read about this one, Bill.
Yeah.
So, often when people have, competitions, they just do the same old thing that everyone's always done.
Rate of interest, isn't it?
So what they're doing, it's a little bit of a competition. I think they're doing it weekly for 4 weeks. And what happens is there's a the prize each week. They give away the prize of basically a discount rate mortgage, yeah, or if you don't want a mortgage, I think they have a cash prize as well. So anyone can enter, and you'll come up.
Take the money.
You'll do all right regardless if you happen to win. But the way they do it is that the interest rate if you want to sign up for this mortgage with them. It's going to come down based on the number of people that actually like the app on that given day. So if there's a whole lot of people that jump on, they're going to give away a really, really cut price mortgage by the sounds of it. Do you think this is going to work? It's just doing something different, I guess. It's got us talking about it. Do you think there's going to be enough interest in it that people are going to like it and share it, and that ASB will get enough free publicity out of it that it was worth the cost of building the app? I mean, you can imagine, building an app like that, building this Facebook app and promoting it and so on will have, no doubt cost them a pretty penny. But
look, ASB is doing some really innovative stuff with technology and social media and so on, and that's just brilliant. And I like the fact that they're trying lots of different angles, lots of different ideas and so on. I'm still not 100% comfortable with the idea of banking through Facebook. I think I'm quite happy with my bank's website and so on. And, you know, the last thing I want, Facebook know everything else about me, and they, yeah. sell, you know, they sell that information to every government around the world. I don't want them knowing how much money I've got as well.
No doubt. Yeah. Well, this is something they've done in partnership with Saatchi & Saatchi. They're calling it ASB Like Loan. So if it sounds like something you're interested in, if you really wish you could get a lower rate mortgage, or you're interested in social media, then definitely go and have a look. Yeah. We'd be interested in hearing people's feedback. Is this something you're into, or do you just hate that thought of your bank being involved in the social media world at all?
But for an idea, 10 out of 10 ASB.
Two products that we've got here, we've managed to get hands on really early on a couple of new products. Now we've got the new it's the Huawei P6, isn't it? Now, you've seen that one.
It's the iPhone lookalike.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I put up a photo online of this just to see how people would respond. I didn't show the whole thing or the Huawei logo, but the Huawei Ascend P6 coming in euros at about 449, I think they've listed it at, which when we did a quick translation worked out to about 760 New Zealand dollars. By the time you bump GST onto that, we're looking at around 900,
so thick end of 1,000,
900 New Zealand dollars. Yeah. If they do a direct conversion, we often find the prices actually end up being a little bit steeper once they reach New Zealand. So this is a pretty high end phone, and it's certainly got that a really nice feel and a finish to it. But we're talking about a brand here that is considered a discount low-end brand,
yeah.
And we look at the specs of the phone, and they're not really it's not really at the top end of Android specifications, is it? It's not the full HD screen that we've seen from Sony and Samsung and their top phones. It does come with the latest version of Android 4.22, but. Yeah, I'm a little bit unsure about that pricing for what it is.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask. I mean, bear in mind that's more than you can get a BlackBerry Z10 for, which is a very nice smartphone too. And BlackBerry's got that sort of corporate cachet, which Huawei doesn't really have at this stage. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the sign they're trying to move up market.
I think they are, and it makes sense. I mean, Samsung went from where they weren't a particularly well respected electronics company, over the last 10 years or so, they've really transitioned into a very, very well respected company. Such a focus on making good quality stuff, and obviously marketing themselves very, very well also. And they make good profits doing that, but if you're just at the bottom of the barrel sort of competing with all the other low-end devices, pretty hard to make a profit,
yeah.
Isn't it?
And no one does except Samsung in the Android market. So, well, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, so in terms of specs, it's got a 4.7-inch 720p resolution screen. And... yeah, we're talking. It's a dual core processor, I think, coming in at quad core processor at 1.5 gigahertz. So it's reasonable, but it's not really the exact top of the line. And it's got a micro SD card slot in there, and I think it comes with 8 gigs of storage. So. Yeah, it's good, but I think at that price point, I would expect I'd expect a little bit more actually. Good camera, 8 megapixel camera, and I think you've got 5 megapixel front facing camera as well, if I remember correctly. So if you're looking for something a little bit different that lots of people don't have. This will be one of those devices. Haven't heard an announcement date for New Zealand, but not too far off, is it? So just one last gadget, and you've been looking at it there, was the new one from Sony is the Xperia SP.
At $600, pretty much.
So this is sort of the lowest price point that we've got a 4G LTE smartphone coming into the market. I think we've also got HTC have one at the same price point that we looked at maybe a month or so back. Quite a nice looking handset. Interesting, the little space at the bottom where you've sort of, you think, oh, should the phone have just been 3 millimeters shorter, or is this cool? This sort of see-through panel bit that it has at the at the bottom.
I thought that too.
I think it's fine size wise, but you look at it and think, oh, they could have shaved a few millimeters off there to meet up with specs. It's a bit of a heavier phone than the Huawei one. It's 155 grams. You've got a 4.6 inch screen, similar resolution or same resolution really as the Huawei one. It's a dual core processor, so it is coming down a little bit in spec there, 1.7 gigahertz, and Android 4.1 that it comes with. So, but the big thing is that this is a 4G phone, whereas the Huawei one is just actually a 3G device. Which at that sort of price point, what we're expecting now is to see 4G in all of those top end phones. I think it's fascinating that one doesn't. But the Xperia SP comes in. I think it's got quite a nice look to it, and I don't think it's too far away from being launched here. So I think what's good about this is we're now seeing a really broad range of handsets coming out from Sony at the higher end that look like nice, well built, well designed phones. They've got all the latest smarts in them, so you can tap the phone to the remote if you've got one of the newest Sony TVs and have the image that's on your smartphone screen bounce up onto your TV screen. So there's some good innovation there coming through where Sony are integrating their products together.
Yeah, it's a really nice space. I mean, a really nice phone, and it's a very busy space. The smartphone business is, ultra competitive. But there hasn't been much in the way of new breakthroughs in the last sort of 6 months to a year. And I noticed this morning that a report from Gartner says that the sales are actually, they're now down to, they're just growing at about 4% a year, which means really that it could be that the big smartphone boom has been and gone, sadly.
Yeah, well, we've got half of the market now in New Zealand that has a smartphone, and over time that'll keep increasing. Yeah. But maybe we've had the biggest jump over the last year or two.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying. That I think the big growth period and development period is probably behind us now.
Certainly at the high end, I think that there's plenty of room for those people that don't have smartphones to buy the lower cost $200-$300 smartphones, and those prices will come down. You'll be able to get a good smartphone next year within that sort of $100-$150 price point, I would imagine. Whereas there's not much for that sort of money today. Now the other device finally we had here that we were playing with earlier was that HP Revolve 810. Now this is a sort of a corporate device aimed at the business users that have been buying high end laptops and ultrabooks. Now I meant to cover this one some weeks back, but we didn't manage to get to it. But we finally got it. That's probably our mistake for not covering that one earlier. But it's quite a nice device, isn't it?
Very much. I mean, it's another one of those devices which is, it hasn't really made up its mind whether it's a tablet or a PC or it's a bit of each and so on. But nice design, nice feel. And HP is just, it seems to have got its mojo back a bit in the last year or so. I don't know if you feel that, Paul?
I mean, we're definitely seeing a sort of a broader variety of products, both at that sort of business end and the consumer end. You know, we've got the what was the new 7-inch tablet that that we've been looking at recently with Android. I mean, that's launched in right at the right at the bottom end in terms of pricing, very competitive, $229 New Zealand for a an Android. An Android tablet from a from a big name, and then right up to a lot of these high end devices and the touch smart devices and so on. But I think this will fall well into that sort of corporate space. You fold the screen down and turn it into a thick tablet with Windows 8, and you've got all the ports and bits and pieces on that you need. Coming in around $2,500 sort of starting price point.
It's the kind of thing that
which is pretty, pretty typical at that at that sort of end. So, I think there'll definitely be some people that are quite interested in this sort of multi-use type device. So, and we'll see more of these over the next few months. Now, that really wraps it up for us this week. We're continuing to watch what's happening with PC World, Computer World, reseller news. I guess the latest on that is that IDG or Australia are taking over those publications along with the CIO magazine that was with Fairfax. So there will be some continuation, but we haven't really heard exactly what that's going to boil down to in terms of staff numbers locally on the ground here in New Zealand. I guess the pick is that that's going to be either slightly or massively reduced in terms of numbers compared to what Fairfax has had, which I think about a dozen staff on the ground here in New Zealand across those 12 publications.
There were 12 people, and it's pretty clear that IDG will have fewer than 12. But how many fewer, we don't know.
Mm. All right. We'll keep watching that one. But hey, thanks everyone for joining us this week on the NZ Tech Podcast. Now, you can find us online at nztechpodcast.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter. There's an NZ Tech group on LinkedIn. Now, Bill, where do we find you online again?
BillBennett.co.nz and BillBennettNZ on Twitter.
Excellent, and I'm pretty easy to track down, just Paul Spain on Twitter, and you can get my Tech Jungle blog via GeekZone or techjungle.com. Thanks, guys. Catch you on the next episode. See ya.